Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Well, hello, friends.
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
Brian, your background looks different.
Does it? Because it looks like maybe the exact same background I've always had. Maybe the lighting is a little more even. Does it feel a little bit more spacious, like there's room to breathe here?
Did you get smaller? Did you shrink yourself?
It does kind of look like that. Now that I'm looking at the feed right now, it looks like maybe it's a miniature version of Brian because the background's a little out of focus because it's farther away. But no, we're broadcasting from the brand new studio for the very first time. I'm sure there's probably some quality to my audio that is not quite what everybody's familiar with as we continue to figure everything out with the monitors and everything. But this is it. We're out of Diamond Club Studios at the 7 Acre Schwood now.
Wow. Awesome. That's very cool. I'm still here. in the hovel. The podcast hovel. Hey folks, man, it's one of these things where you're like, man, I don't know if there's enough stories. And then you have so many, you're like, I'm gonna have to push this till next week and push this to next week. Cause a lot of stuff comes. The weird just happens. Yeah. Let's start off with an update though on the, storm Area 51.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Did it happen? How many people bands?
At this point, Brian, we are still looking for an exact number on how many alien cheeks were clapped, but it does seem as if there was a far less turnout than at least the initial 3 million that said that they were going to do it on Facebook might suggest.
So how much fewer can it be, right? I mean, 3 million people. I know that when you send postcards, direct response, you're happy to get like a 1% response rate. So even if only 1 out of 100 of those people were to show up, I mean, that's still what, 30,000 people?
I think the term's like homeopathic levels.
Yeah. So most of the news that came out, aside from what was everything you would want and to expect as the day grew near, there was an amazing live local television report where somebody was Naruto running behind the anchor. There were some very fun Twitter videos. But I think we were in, and Andrew, if you have anything more official here, the last I saw, we were in the hundreds, maybe even low hundreds.
Well, no, it's good because that was
the best.
Yeah, that allowed the police to go in and I'm getting my voice back. That allowed the sorry.
There you go.
Sorry. Trust me, I'm more annoyed by my voice than anybody else. The police were able to go in and they say, give very stern warnings to people and tell them, hey, probably not a good idea to go beyond the certain limits. And so that message seemed to be effective. People showed up. They went to where they were allowed to go. They hung out. They're like, hey, we're here. Yeah, that allowed some photos. The media showed up, got some photos. And so best possible ending.
Yeah, you know, there were a few organizers that had expected closer to the multiple thousands, if not 10,000 range, that had 2-day festivals set up that wound up becoming 1-day festivals because just not enough people wound up showing up to what was, I think, Rachel, Nevada, but the town kind of on the outskirts of where Area 51 is. I don't know what the result of the downtown Vegas thing was, although I suspect that would probably attract X amount of people who just happened to be in Vegas and had little to no interest of driving into the heart of the Nevada desert.
Yeah. Did they ever reveal what mysterious classified acts were going to be at the Las Vegas festival?
I take a wild guess and say a teenager with dreadlocks and a laptop. That would be my educated guess.
Yeah, I wonder if we could pull that up. It's, you know, and you know, we could chalk it down to the conspiracy, you know, that the men in black managed to, you know, stop the fun on this.
More bread and circus, am I right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that it wound up ending. The one thing you didn't want out of this was a public safety hazard, or God forbid somebody to get hurt or worse. So we avoided that. The internet got its memes. Reddit was still awash in various different macros of the Naruto runner behind the live report guy. So I think anybody who was very interested got what they wanted out of the Storm Area 51 event.
If you try to go to the stormarea51.us website, which is the one where they're supposed to have concert footage, it's like not a secure website, and you have to insert your like secure, you know, your password to get access to it. So I don't think we're going to find out. No.
Yeah.
Sounds almost like it was thrown together kind of last minute and half-assed.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was obviously, right? Like this was only there because somebody had a 4 million a page thing on Facebook.
So was that the concert we're looking at there?
Yeah, I guess this was downtown, yeah. And yeah, that looks like a big old event. Like that looks like a great little downtown event.
I found an article that did not list any DJs that showed up, though it did say that a few were there. Though apparently the one that took place in Rachel, Hico in Hico, Nevada, is that right? I guess they got Paul Oakenfold out for that. And that's
God.
That's the one where hundreds of people showed up, and then Arby's came by the next day to give away free food. So a real mess of stuff, huh?
Oh man, that free Arby's though, that was almost worth a plane ticket though.
I mean, yeah, let's just say if that had been pre-announced, Andrew would have been.
No, it was. I didn't bring it up. They did announce that Arby's was going to go there. I just didn't get a chance to mention it.
Oh.
I was torn.
The Arby's menu.
So this Saturday, it looks like we're going to be getting an update from Mr. Elon Musk on the progress of the Starship. That's the next generation SpaceX rocket that's designed to go just about anywhere in the solar system. And we already saw the test of the Starhopper. Now they're building Starship, which is going to have like 3 Raptor engines and would be, I think, orbit capable. And so Elon's going to tell us the more details on this. We had some new updates just from the images we're getting of this thing. It's being constructed right now, and you can see over the last couple of days they put the wings. They're not really wings, but they're like, you know, stabilizing surfaces on the craft, and it's taking a different form than what we originally thought it was going to be. And Saturday we'll find out more about the overall look.
So when you say orbit capable, does that mean you're not saying single stage to go to orbit? Just that it. What does that mean, orbit capable?
Single stage to orbit, capable of doing that.
That's crazy. Without any kind of, I guess that's a function of just how empty and light everything is in there.
Yeah, and you wouldn't get it back without it having to. Like the idea, he says that Elon said via Twitter, which is the most reliable way to get detailed information about engineering. It said that if it was fully fueled, that this would be capable of reaching orbit, but you would not be able to bring it back down and do a propulsive landing on it.
Oh, got it. So enough fuel to get it up there, but then it's going to have to crash in the ocean somewhere.
Yeah, but simultaneously, they're actually building the booster, too. So they have all the they're building this thing in these big stainless steel rings that they're welding together, but fastening together. And so that's being built too. So they're going to have a full stack, but what they want to do is they're going to test just the Starship and bring it, you know, going for, like, I think doing like a 28-mile jump first or something. And then we don't know if he's going to try to orbit that thing or not. Man. He's building 2 at a time.
It doesn't seem like there's a lot of money. I think if you're looking for a big display of awesome power, all I need to see is it going what looks like out of the atmosphere and then coming back down and landing. I would much rather see that than see it go all the way to orbit and be told, anyway, Poochie died on his way back to his home planet, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the end game for this thing is that it's going to be used with a booster. And so certainly to put it into orbit and then like, yes, you know, it's now it's going to burn up and look at that pretty light. But as an engineering thing and kind of like doing the thing that's never been done before and doing what people have thought is impossible, there is something to the idea of a single stage to orbit. I mean, there is something about like, hey, yeah, no, we built a single stage to orbit rocket. Isn't that cool? Because also, the thing about doing single stage to orbit, if you can get into a stable orbit, it's like you have, hey, we just put a space station up there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What if they set it up to orbit and then they were like, yeah, we're going to go, once we get this booster done, we're going to go bring it some fuel and it'll land later.
Bring it back. Yeah.
That's amazing. Wow.
So who knows? You know, I don't know if he wants to launch the thing and then, you know, burn up untold millions of dollars, you know, in that process. But they could do it and just test. I mean, going really high too is they want to get a lot of data back about reentry and the aerodynamics and stuff. So we don't know. That's kind of the beauty of it, is we don't know. We did not expect this to come together so quickly. The fact that the, you know, Starhopper has already done its, you know, we've already seen that fly. And now that we're going to see Starship, the Mark One Starships, you know, in the next few months take off, that's movie timeline. That's insane.
Yeah. So what kind of timetable do you think that we're looking at from this announcement, or are we going to get timetable at all?
We'll get an updated timetable for sure. What he said in the previously was they hoped to fly Starship this year. They hope to fly Starship this year, meaning that craft would not go into orbit, but to have it fly, you know, 28 miles up or whatever the distance up is, you know, go really high.
One of those hops, right? Just to make sure that it can blast off and land back.
Yeah, but a huge hop, a much, much bigger hop than we saw before. A hop that we'd be like, well, it looks like it's going to space, but not. And then he said early next year, orbital. And they're building the booster, so that could mean, you know, stacking that on top of a booster and then taking off from there. They've been making changes to their Cape Canaveral launch pad there, which they think is going to be for accommodating Starship. So next year, orbital.
Wow.
So let's talk about this announcement that's coming up. You said it's this weekend?
Saturday, yeah.
And is there any expectations about what he's going to talk about? I mean, obviously, they're putting on the, I don't know, winglets, the stabilizers, whatever you want to call them. So there's going to be some kind of unveiling on there. But does anybody have really much of a clue as to what claims will be made?
From an engineering point of view, there's been a lot of questions about what they're going to be using for the final look of it. Like the final aerodynamic shape will be two wings, three wings. He says two wings now. What will be the heat, you know, are they going to be using heat tiles attached to the surface for parts of it, the look of it, you know, and I think, you know, a calendar of what the plan is, the final, like what they say, they think the cargo capacity is going to be, cause that's been changing. He's talked about stretching it from the original design. I have, you know, a mock-up of what was like the last announced design here, which, we know is now garbage because he's changed it so many times. You know, we'll find out probably what's going to be closer to the final iteration of it. And, you know, their plans for Mars, et cetera, probably. So.
Cool.
Damn. Well, I'll give you guys a plan. How about you head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings and support this very podcast? Folks, we moved into a whole new studio. Brian is right now live from Diamond Club Studios in the 7-acre Schwood. If you would like to make sure that we continue to utilize that space for all of your Weird Things glory, then go ahead on over right now. Patreon.com/weirdthings is where you go. If you're a patron, you get our After Things podcast before anyone else and the satisfaction that you're making this happen. Thank you guys so much. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
It's not easy being a podcaster out there. You
it's
know?
Not. It's not. True story.
I don't know. It's pretty easy. You just sit there and talk, and people tune in and listen, and then you say, go to my Patreon, and then they show up. It's pretty easy. I had a real job once.
Hey, you know who also has a real job?
Who's that?
People watching the skies for stuff and things.
Oh,
some of the people who watch the skies. Their job. They're not pros. In fact, you had an amateur. Have you heard about Comet C2019Q4?
No.
I mean, who hasn't?
Me.
Well, remember when Oumuamua, or however you pronounce it, was pretty big news? That was the interstellar object that came into our solar system.
Yeah, the big vaguely rocket-shaped elliptoid that was tumbling around.
Yeah, and we're confused because it didn't match the profile of a comet. We're like, what is this thing? And it's like, later, dudes, I'm gone. And we're like, wait, we didn't even get to know you. Well, we have Comet C2019Q4 now appears to be another interstellar visitor.
Oh, man, look at that. All of these freeloaders come scooting on in, soaking in our stellar rays, and then off they go without leaving so much as a tip.
Wait, now what's that? What is that? Just to describe to the audio listeners, what's that like beginner magic trick with like the gem rod?
Oh, the hot rod.
The hot rod. Yeah, it looks like a hot rod in space as it is tumbling through our solar system.
So the cool thing about this one is because we're calling it a comet means we're pretty sure it's a comet, so we know what it is. But it's a comet from another solar system, from what we understand. And it was discovered by amateur astronomer Genadeya Borisov. Okay, so that's kind of awesome, is that you have somebody out there who's a hobbyist who spends a lot of time doing this, though, who is able to discover, you know, a comet. And, that's kind of awesome. It was, you know, chances of finding something like that are crazy, but he did it.
I'll tell you what, that's one of those things where it's like, yes, a bunch of people with telescopes, that's a low fidelity instrument and maybe low fidelity of education or expertise when it comes to astronomy. But like, you can't argue with those numbers when you just have the number of amateur astronomers out there. In fact, this last couple of weeks has been extraordinary. If you're a backyard astronomer, both Saturn and Jupiter have been stellar, so to speak, over the last couple of weeks. It's been really good viewing.
Yeah, and he, by the way, he works as an engineer at the Crimean Astronomical Station, but he's an engineer. And they're like, they point out, but he's not an astronomer. Well, he's made a discovery most astronomers would spend their lifetimes hoping to capture.
Yeah, man. He's got a little thing called eyes, and he can see comets.
Yeah, I mean, like, honestly, and this goes beyond that, but I know this is rampant amongst the scientific community or certain fields. Once you do something that it's a credit to the profession, congratulations. You got fast-tracked in. Like, astronomers, what are you doing drawing a line between you and a dude that found something that nobody else found? Like, he didn't go to school. Like, student debt, that's really what you want to be, like, the only thing between you and somebody? Nah, just bring him into the fold. You have to contribute something amazing to get in without doing all the training. He did it. Congratulate the man.
I feel like we're dangerously close to doing our exact Night Attack bit, railing on student debt all over again.
Whatever student debt, I'm sure that we could go and get into that. I'm just saying, you know, it's the same thing with Richard Garriott and not being an astronaut, right?
Oh, yeah, he has to be called a cosmonaut, like, because only members of NASA are astronauts.
It's like, whatever, he got up into space. Not everyone's going to do it, because what you're worried about is people diluting the phrase, right? It's like, well, anybody can be an astronaut. Yeah. Anybody can go to space. He got to space like 10 years, 2 decades before it might become commonplace. Give the man a piece of cake.
There's a fun story. A school in Michigan, apparently there'd been rumors floating around that there was something strange in the pond next to the school.
What? You're talking about Gary? He's there all the time. He just gets twice a year he gets in there and washes off all that grime he picks up as he rides the silver rails eating beans out of a can.
Well, Gary caused a little bit of a concern, Brian. People worried about Gary.
Gary's harmless. Name one terrible... Actually, don't name anything Gary's done.
No, yeah, yeah. Come on, Brian. It's 2019. That lifestyle has a lot of pitfalls these days.
Well, it wasn't until a teacher actually spotted as we're calling Gary, that people started to take the story seriously. And authorities went in and took a look and said, yep, there's an alligator in this pond in Michigan.
In Michigan? What? How does an alligator get all the way up to Michigan?
That is an alligator. And they got this dope drone footage of it, too. Oh, my God. Wow. So next to the high school whose nickname is the Kicking Mules is Gary the Alligator. Wow.
Man, they're getting the most out of that drone footage.
Hell yeah, they are.
So they had to actually basically start draining the pond to isolate the alligator. And finally, they found him. And like, yeah, hey, alligator.
So how uncommon is this?
Well, you had the stories of alligators being places they weren't, you know, happens often because people buy them as pets. People get hold of them and they bring them to areas where they're not used to. And then they eventually they get a little large for the terrarium or whatever. And then, you know, we've heard stories like, you know, some crazy woman raising an alligator in her bathtub. And then you're just like, I'm going to let you go free in Michigan where you love the winters. And you put them
and
there.
That's profoundly dangerous, obviously, for the alligator. You got to get them into a place where that they're more naturally suited to live, right?
Yeah. If we talked about how alligators can survive winters in ponds or lakes where the water freezes over.
No, but I would love to hear about this.
I have heard stories of like freak cold fronts that every once in a while come through South Florida, and that lizards will just go into like suspended animation in trees, like big lizards, right? Mm-hmm. And then they'll just drop as if dead from the tree, only for them to like wake up from the warming of the impact and then start skittering around.
Yeah, we had a case where somebody saw all these dead iguanas and started shoving them into their car with the heater.
Oh my gosh.
And as they were driving, the iguanas came back alive.
And well, and when your cold-blooded animals, you know, just kind of just get cold, not quite freeze, but just get cold, they do get very, very stiff. So I can imagine picking up an iguana and it's like, it looks like you got it from the taxidermist. And then all of a sudden you're like, throw them in the back. It'll be fine.
Well, dude's just trying to clear dead iguanas from the yard, right? And on his way, all of a sudden, it's friggin' pandemonium. All these, like, freaked out iguanas are going nuts in the back of his car.
That is amazing.
Yeah. I don't, you know, it's one of these things. I've heard the story a couple times. I'm trying to find out the original source on it and make sure it's not apocryphal. That's the problem, because these things start to thaw and people are like, oh, look at these dead, you know, iguanas. Let me pick it up and let me pose with it. And next thing you know, I'm alive. So just be warned. But the thing with the alligators, the way they'll do it is they found that alligators will actually keep their snouts above the ice. And so you could be walking along on a frozen pond and just see it looks like an alligator snout. Guess what?
Oh my gosh.
An alligator,
and like I assume they breathe vertical. At that point, the colder they get, the slower their metabolism, so they don't have to breathe very much, right?
Yeah, just they can still they keep the snouts out there just so they can get enough air. So that would be kind of freaky. Yeah, I'm gonna kick that rock.
Holy cow! Ooh.
Oh my god! Also, imagine that what a majesty of the animal kingdom that an alligator is like. Yeah, I think this is getting a little cold. I'm just going to leave my snout up here as we slowly freeze to what would be fatal levels for anybody else in the animal kingdom.
I got two more stories related. It's Wildcat Monday.
Oh, rah, rah, rah.
You heard what,
is that our sounder?
Yeah, that's the Wildcat Monday sounder, beloved by all.
Have you heard what's stalking Paris along the rooftops?
Is it a wildcat?
We need the alarm. Apparently, there's some pretty amazing photos of a Black Panther spotted roaming the rooftops of Lille, France, actually.
Wow,
and,
a panther?
You see these photos.
A panther?
Black panther.
isn't a black panther just a cheetah all the way black?
Brian, you know.
Sorry, no, I say just as if that's not
a cheetah with black fur.
No, if I remember correctly, there's a bit of trivia that it's not a distinct species from cheetah. It's just a cheetah's coloration. Let me double check my facts.
Isn't a Black Panther just
a cheetah, one of the most fast and deadly animals on the planet, in a dark level, therefore making it stealth and all the more deadly.
Leopard. Is that what it is? I don't know.
Yeah, our hive mind in the chat room is pointing out that it is indeed a black leopard.
Got it.
Yeah, sorry, jaguar,
you mean
leopard.
Just a black leopard.
Yes, just, I mean, yeah, if it's not a cheetah, who cares?
Yeah, because, like, difference is, like, cheetahs, like, almost never, ever, 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 ever attack people. Like, cheetahs are pretty docile, pretty afraid. If they attack somebody, it's very rare. Like,
they usually have it coming. It's because they were midway through making a comment on YouTube, and that cheetah's just had enough. He's all hopped up on these cheese balls.
Actually, Brian, I say because they were vulnerable children, but whatever you want to go with, that's fine.
Whoops.
panthers are a little ferocious there. So you got a panther stalking through, you know, France. So there's that. And again, probably, you know, somebody's pet. You know, who are these horrible pet owners too, by the way?
I don't know, dude. I remember when I was on tour.
There's only two, right? We know who these pet owners are. You can go column A, column B. It's either super kooky animal lover, right?
Who or drug is dealer. Just
hoarding, or drug dealer. That's it. There's only two.
The Pablo Escobar super kooky drug dealer.
Well, sure. Yeah, I guess really like B is A, but
that deals drugs.
Oh, God. Yeah, right?
Dude, hippos are terrifying.
How would you like to be one of his henchmen in the room and he's just, you know, doing rails and drinking? He's like, ah, you know what I want? I want some hippos. Like, ha, ha, ha. No, click, I want hippos. And you're like, how the F do we get hippos here? That problem solver, we need to hire that guy.
I mean, for anybody who has not seen, extra bonus pick, but if you have not seen the ESPN 30 for 30, the two Escobars, to just get a sense of the extravagance of Pablo Escobar. He was in jail kind of nominally by way of the Colombian government and just decides, I'm bored. Hey, send out my private jet to dot through Europe and South America, pick up all my favorite soccer players so they can just play a game for me in the prison yard that me and my friends will bet on. Like, that's just like, a Wednesday. I'm just feeling a little peckish.
Remember the Kevin?
I miss my hippos.
Remember the Kevin Smith routine about Prince Land?
No, I don't think I saw that.
He's talked about this a couple times where he got called by Prince to Prince's compound in like Minneapolis, and where people just, you know, Prince had his like his sort of devotees around him, whatever. And, you know, and him, Prince was doing some sort of like idea exchange. It was sort of very, very, very nutty. And Kevin Smith talks about the fact that like Prince, you know, has mentioned something about like wanting something. And Prince thinking that if at 2 a.m. he wants a giraffe, somebody will get him a giraffe. You know, that's Prince Land, is you just think this is can happen or whatever. And then Kevin came away from there and he talked about it. And Prince got upset. He's like, you signed an NDA and all. He's like, no, I didn't sign anything, you know. And so Prince is upset. But he was talking about Prince Land, how crazy and delusional you can get when you're super famous. And sometimes people are used to accommodating all your wills. And you take a guy like Pablo Escobar, like where you do have that money and people afraid of dying.
Yeah.
You end up with the world's best soccer players playing in your prison yard or, you know, a pond full of hippos. So squad goals.
Exactly. Brian, I'm just saying, I know that you are you're an aspirational person. These last couple of years have all been about getting this studio. So just so you know, there's always north. You can always look up. Like you're not really succeeding until you get a pond full of hippos.
What's funny is the moment the conversation turned to all the crazy stuff Pablo Escobar would do, this is me like just jellyfishing back away into the background because I know what's coming next is the suggestion box of ideas.
It's just also like, you know, you're just, you know, putting in your secret board. You're wishing it into existence by speaking its name.
So while we were having the stories of Black Panthers stalking France, meanwhile, Washington, D.C., stories of a mountain lion stalking through neighborhoods, including a Ring camera photo of large cat climbing a fence and people starting to worry that there's a cougar in their neighborhood and worried about their pets and stuff. Now, the D.C. Department of Energy and Environment director is like, hey, listen, they're not native to here. Nobody panic. But I think you're like, oh, tell that to France. And it turns out it was actually a neighborhood cat that looked a lot like a mountain lion getting really close to a ring camp.
What's funny is for a split second, I was like, maybe a lynx? No, it looks enough like a house cat.
There's a photo from, I'll send it to you, it was Huffington Post, where you see this image on somebody's ring cam. And if you saw that, like, I would be like, that could be a mountain lion.
And by the way, for the record, Washington, D.C., the same area where the television head man who was dropping off televisions around that area. So the D.C. ring cameras just blowing it up right now.
Yeah. See that photo? Like, you go back to where it starts. And you
see
that
photo.
Thing.
That photo I would buy if you told me it was a jaguar or whatever or a mountain cat. I would buy it
because the edges of those super wide angle lenses distort and make things look bigger.
Yeah, and also the light sort of kind of blows out the detail on it, so it's a little difficult to tell the scale on things.
And because there's a car in the background, and when it's climbing up this fence, it almost looks like it is like half the size of the hood of the car.
Yeah.
So this is the second story we've had that's been, you know, should be sponsored by Ring.com, to be honest with you. Yeah. And
I mean, first of all, like we're dangerously close to the weird things becoming the Ring Report, where all we do is find awesome, weird images that get caught on Ring cameras.
Yeah,
that might be the new thing, though, because we had a lot of like spooky ghost stuff on surveillance cameras until we realized a lot of all the artifacts that caused that stuff. I mean, people still get spooked out by them, but now we're getting more and more Ring camera stuff. Maybe viral. Maybe Ring is doing all of this.
Stranger rings have happened.
I mean, keep in mind, there's a reason that there's that unremovable watermark on all Ring videos that has the word Ring on there, because they know that, like, we're going to capture some stuff. People are going to share it. Easiest way to do it. We'll have a little logo.
Hey, pitch idea. All right. Let's call a meeting. Okay.
All right. Call in the meeting. Go ahead. I call the meeting to order.
Let's get hold of Ring.
All right.
Say, hey, we can help you out with even more crazy stuff.
Oh, so you're like, if you're not faking them, wink, like, guess what? Get in the game, because we are going to design Ring-specific happenings that will drive sales through the roof, baby.
All right, look, okay, so we're already in the pitch room, right? And it's like, hey, man, you thought TV Man was a big hit? We could do much better than put on a freaking TV. How about Abbott?
Brian A-Check Man?
No. Listen, the whole world's going to go nuts when all of a sudden a fully formed, perfectly rehearsed Ring video shows up of two people dressed like Abbott and Costello doing Who's On First. They walk up, they do the full performance in front of a doorbell, and then turn around and walk away. They do it every single place in the neighborhood. Somebody's going to be like, what the hell is this? It looks like Alan Costello just showed up and did Who's On First.
I don't want to step on this, but you'd be like, oh, it's just two local idiots doing Abbott and Costello Who's On First.
No, but not when they're vampires. Look, man, we can make it weird.
Wait, I'm buried the lead.
Yeah, not when we provide the DNA test and it's really Abbott and Costello.
What if, like, you could do, like, we could just do commercials, like, eating a Whopper, you know, in front of somebody's Ring camera, you know, like the mystery Whopper eater or something like that?
You get to dress up as two Mormon missionaries who walk up, and it's as though it's the beginning of Pulp Fiction. They're just talking about good burgers, and they're like, man, I can't even believe that this is an Impossible Whopper. I'd swear that it's real meat. They have a full, and it's like, you know what? I don't even want to bother these people. Let's not ring the doorbell, and off you go.
Did a scene by scene remake of Star Wars, but in one scene in front of each house with a Ring camera. And so you had to put them all together. And then they're like, oh, we got to see the cantina scene. Oh, Frank won't let us see his Ring cam.
Oh, Frank, typical.
Two people walking past a house and they pause to argue about, like, hey, man, I got my money. You can stuff your rebellion. Yeah, good luck. And then off they run.
Or we could do magic.
Ooh.
Ring only magic.
So you sneak up, linking rings. You sneak up to a bunch of houses and just do magic for the ring camera and then move on to the next house. Dude, this is gold. We're giving away free genius publicity ideas here. Hey, anybody want to make a name for themselves? Go for it.
I know. Ring-a-ding-ding if you're a ring representative, because we got that. We got spun gold for you.
Ring casting. It's the new thing, guys. Ring casting. So let's do picks.
Hey, I know I've made this pick a couple times. I'm going to make it one more time. Succession. Man, do I really like Succession. If you haven't seen Succession, go see it. It is in season two now. I binged up to catch up to even up to the episode last night. Oh, my God. Andrew, I very rarely push something on you, but you need to see Succession if just to see. There is a plot line through the second season where the Murdoch-esque family that is at the center of the show is trying to buy a family, another family-owned media company. And this one is very, it's basically like an NPR meets the New York Times kind of, you know, amalgam. But it's the super liberal, like, doppelganger family of our main characters. And it is... I mean, there's just something about indulging the fascination with how the super rich live and how warped everything is that I just can't get enough of. And just watching the super liberal version of it just delighted me to no end.
Cool.
So I went and saw Ad Astra over the weekend. I guess I can't really talk about it because you guys haven't seen it and you're not going to want plot spoilers, right?
Andrew saw it, right?
Yeah, I saw it.
I do not care about spoilers.
Why do you talk about spoiling too much of the plot?
Yeah, well, I think you need a little bit more of a plot to spoil it.
What is this? I keep hearing scuttle about this movie, but I don't know anything about it. I thought it was a biopic. But it doesn't seem that way.
No, no. It takes place in the near future. I'll tell you this much. Let me begin with the part that alone makes it really worth watching. The world building is phenomenal in this. Like, this near future, Brad Pitt is given a mission, and he's told to keep a low profile. He's going to be flying commercial to the moon. And it feels like exactly what I believe 20 years from now, 50 years from now, a commercial flight to the moon would feel like, right down to, normally I hate product placement and wedged in current brands that we know, but I totally believed it when I saw the subway or the Hudson News or whatever. I totally believed it when he asked for a pillow and a blanket and was casually told that'll be $127. I believed it when we got to the slightly more sparse environments of Mars. I believed it when we were on the fringe of things and made it all the way out to Neptune. It's a very, very believable world. The plot, surprisingly thin and very untypical of a Hollywood plot. I was like, well, that can't really be what they're doing. And it turns out that was what they were doing. I was like, oh, all right. But I enjoyed the world so very much that I do recommend it. I give it a thumbs up. Did you like it, Andrew?
I had similar feelings to you. It is a beautifully done movie. And I say beautiful. It's not like every shot is beautiful. Like, there is a genre of science fiction, which is the idea of, and you got bits of this like in a, Anthem, where you kind of have a future, but it's strip malls. It's not everything's a glossy city that you think it is. It's still filled with smoke-filled casinos and things like this. The future where you have, it's a mixed future. The idea that there's these really cool high-tech things, but in some ways there's still, you know, Walmarts and just vast industrial tracts and stuff. And so it's a very interesting, maybe more realistic. And I liked this because the director, it was James Gray. What he did was create this future where we have, we're going to, you know, we have, you know, settlements on the moon, on Mars, and yet parts of it, like, you know, you go to the moon and it feels like, you know, it feels like Universal City Walk. You know, you go to Mars and you're like, you feel like, man, the best days, it was like the exciting part was probably 20 years ago. You know, feels like this is now sort of at the the waning part of this age of exploration in a sense. And so it's depressing, but I thought very, very, you know, beautifully done. It did feel like I wasn't quite sure about the consistency of, like, if this is the case, why is this the case? You know, if you sort of analyze, like, we could get into in the spoiler territory about, like, you know, this feels like this is such a rare thing, but, you know, I don't know. Because you're in a world where, like, yeah, you fly on Virgin, you know, Virgin Atlantic to go to the moon, but, like, there are only, like, four people in there, and then you go to the moon, and there's an Applebee's. And you're like, is this for rich people or people who like Applebee's? You know? And that's
well,
a minor thing.
I got the impression that they did a good job of portraying Earth as crowded, and they portrayed the moon as bustling. They portrayed Mars as kind of under construction, and then out beyond that, you know, we didn't really see any specific places. But there's a couple of beats, because you got to have something interesting happen on their way. General alert, I think it's in the trailers that, you know, you're watching somebody take a journey from Earth to Neptune, you know, the farthest out planet, and you got to have something happen along the way. So I thought they did a great job of the dust up that happens on the moon, because they set up enough that there are disputed territories or whatever, and you're watching them on a rover just getting from point A to point B, and then just in the background you see a rover, and even though it looks like the exact same kind of rover as the one that they're in, you know, that's probably trouble, and sure enough it is. But I also enjoyed the very brief Mayday haunted ship moment on the way. I thought that was a nice little self-contained 5-minute mystery.
But it does build up the larger universe. It sort of sets the stakes for what happens, though. There is a, hey, this is sort of where government in the world has gone. And so when you finally find more revelations, you kind of understand, oh yeah, this, it does fit into the world building. But I do agree. I walked out of there going, that it's one of these movies that, like, sometimes you see somebody dips their toes into science fiction or space because a director says, I would love to do the challenge. I'd love to do that. And then you find, like, I loved Interstellar, but I wished Interstellar was 20 or 30% more developed, because I think it's a beautiful, beautiful movie, and some of the best elements there could have been expanded. And it seemed like Nolan was excited about making a space movie and had a date, which that movie was going to come out, whatever state it was ready to go. And Ad Astra sort of feels like James Gray wanting to do a space movie, and the script he and Ethan Gross did, you know, I felt like there's probably multiple versions of this, and this is the path they went on to. And it's a beautiful movie. They try to do space in a very realistic sort of way. They don't explain things too much, I think. I didn't walk out of there at the same, like, I think the best movie we've had in recent years on space is Martian and, like, Gravity, you know. Gravity was a consistent, we knew it's survival, Martian survival.
Yeah,
very
I think both The Martian and Gravity benefited from fantastic characters and fantastic high-energy plots. Ad Astra is a little bit more of a meditation, and you got to kind of, there's a little bit more telling and a little less showing that I would like from that kind of movie. So it doesn't really compete on the same level. But I think the world built in Ad Astra is more believable and more realistic and more rich than either Gravity or The Martian.
That is kind of a fascinating thing, right? That if you're not doing a fully kind of like fantasy or genre space movie, that space movies tend to be like quote unquote near future realistic, you know, kind of space movies tend to be either very survival, like shipwreck, or, you know, some kind of element of like, I shouldn't be here. I need to get out of here. This is an inhospitable place that I need to escape, or very meditational. It's like Solaris, or even, You take the horror element of like Event Horizon or something like that, or Sunshine,
or something like The Fountain.
Yeah, well, Fountain. Yeah, I mean that's all, you know, probably a more aggressive explosion of that idea. But there's just a lot of shots of people looking out of windows and thinking about what it all means.
Yeah, here I put this is in kind of, I think, the new cool category that I like, though, of Gravity, Martian, and now Ad Astra, of like, let's do stories about people and not about, you know, aliens or supernatural occurrences. Let's do people, you know, and set it in our own solar system and stuff there. And I think that's kind of neat. And I think that, you know, Martian was the most successful of that. I mean, Gravity probably one of the most critically appreciated of that. I think Ad Astra visually is neat. So absolutely see it.
We'll talk about it in after things, but I'd be remiss if I didn't at least put a little tip of the hat to my 15-year-old daughter. Finally got me to watch in all of Infinity Train. The episodes are only like 11 minutes, 12 minutes long each. It's from the guy who created Regular Show, and it's pretty much Snowpiercer for kids. Kid running away, wants to go to camp, ends up finding a magical train where each car is another crazy world with a mystery to solve. And guess what? She makes it all the way to the engine at the end of the season. But along the way, there was one moment that, like, to me, the hallmark of something truly great in comedy is when I am dead ass alone in a room and I burst out laughing until the point of crying. And in this case, that happened, and I had to walk down the hall and apologize to my 15-year-old for ever having doubted her. It was really a lot of fun. Highly recommended.
My pick is the iPhone 11 Pro Max, whatever.
The Bro?
Yeah. And my reasons for this is my girlfriend shot a movie last night, she shot a short film last night, and we were out in very, very dark in a driveway, and in between doing stuff, I was able to get some behind the scenes stuff, and that, and it's a new feature, like, you know, the Google Android phones have it too, which is this, you know, the ability to shoot in really, really, really low light using, you know, artificial intelligence that sort of figures out, like, I think this is what this is. The low light photography on this fantastic. The super wide angle on there is amazing. So if you're use your phone for camera stuff a lot, really, really, really recommend. If you're thinking about upgrading, very happy with it. And that low light alone is amazing. Again, if you're in the Android universe, congratulations. You have your version of that too in the newer phones. And so, you know, we're getting a new Pixel, which I'm sure is going to have a fantastic version of that. But night mode on here is amazing. The super wide is amazing. So,
I have it too. You know, whenever the new phone comes out and they're like, it's the best camera ever and it's got so many megapixels, it'll make you cry. I'm sort of like, you know, I go around and I take pictures for the first couple of days, and then eventually I accidentally smudge the lens and I'm just like, this camera sucks. Like, and I'll just kind of forget about it. I gotta say, the experience of having three cameras on here is just kind of a game changer as you're like zooming in and zooming out. Previously, you could very much obviously tell this is a digital zoom. The picture is degrading the further you get in. And certainly you can get to that point now, but the range in which you are just in like actual awesome lens zone is 99% of all pictures that you're going to take. Like it's awesome.
I want to show just a couple photos on my camera, which is not the way to do it, but like you get the idea at night where you're seeing only lights coming from inside the car.
Hold on. This shot, if you were to just show it to me without context, I would tell you that it looks like this shot was taken at twilight because it looks like you could see the sun setting behind. But if you are telling me that that's full on at night, those are just city lights in the background creating that glow.
Yes. Let me send this to Bryce so we can send a better one. That is the glow of Los Angeles behind them. And like, it's one of these things where it is just so much. I'm going to send you a photo of Roshni directing. It is so much. It's better than you do. I mean, but not you. Maybe not you. Me. You know, see, it's better than me at night when it comes to that. And it looks like HDR. It's just I thought the night photographs were amazing because they just looked so good. And, you know, we did some cool lighting in the car and stuff. But this is me just standing outside, pulling out my phone, grabbing photos. And, you know, we live in this really cool age of, you know, cameras and stuff. And I can show you a photo of Marcus Eddy sitting in the car. But yeah, it is.
Is Marcus Eddy in the short film? That's awesome.
Marcus stars in it. Marcus is our star.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Marcus was amazing. So,
for those who don't know, Marcus Eddy is a extremely talented magician. And I'm glad he's doing that.
Yeah, Marcus was on just recently on Penn & Teller Fool Us, came back, fooled them, and you know, works with David Blaine, does all sorts of creative stuff, all that. So anyhow, send a couple photos if we have a chance to show them for our live audience here. That was the thing that just blew me away, though, was being there at night and pulling my camera out when I never would have pulled the camera out before, because I'm like, I'm not going to get any images here. And then, you know, you hold down the button. It says hold it still for 3 seconds. But it's smart enough to know if you move the camera, it'll still try to get the faces right and everything. You know, somebody has to be moving around a lot to get to be a blur. That function was great. The super wide angle is amazing because
you
just...
So what we're seeing is a case where it's almost as though the camera isn't actually taking a snapshot of that moment, but instead it's gathering enough data that an AI can tell the story of what that moment looked like to you with your eyes. And it makes me wonder how much longer until we enhance that, because yes, factually, this head was tilted that way or whatever. How much longer until we have an AI enhance the storytelling elements of a photograph as well?
So
where it's like, let me make this head bigger. Let me bring this in. Let me frame. There's a lot of dead space in here. What if we just crop this? In other words, doing the job that photo editors, the humans do.
I mean, number one, AI process, or maybe not AI, but certainly processed photos are about as old as smartphones. Like, as soon as you had the ability to do that, each, you know, I remember looking at like old photo comparisons of Samsung phones versus iPhone stuff, and you realize that there is just a certain level of like base processing that phones would do just to make sure that every time you look at a picture, you're a little happier with it. And this is even pre-Instagram filters and stuff like that. But look, Brian, I think you're right. I mean, we're seeing it more and more. You know, the Apple Portrait mode is a great example. I know that there's certainly other things on Android that do a similar thing, where now you are just looking at a image that is unreal, that is literally unreal. And to your point, the question would be, all right, are there things that we deal with now? And let's, for example, take something like red eye or something like that. That was an early problem with photography that just kind of made you look weird and you wish wasn't there in a bygone era. Is there a thing that you can do, or a thing that happens in photos that we don't even think of as solvable now? Like, oh, my eyes were closed, or my hair was out of place. Something that could be subtle that would make everything kind of just look better, that is more of a, every time if it were fixed, it'd be better than we might realize now. That's an interesting idea.
And there are people in the chat that apparently are missing my point. They're all like, Android's had that forever. That's not what I'm talking about. I mean to the level where the AI in your phone is listening and understands the context of what's happening and understands that, well, this moment was a sad moment. It was the surprising moment that you know, this happened. Or this is a happy moment. This is the moment that somebody found out about their diploma. So I'm going to take, of this 6-second window, I'm going to take these elements. I'm gonna expand it, close this in. I'm gonna blur this out. I'm gonna make this face pop. I'm actually gonna take for the face. There's a better photo from 20 minutes ago that I'm gonna use to comp that up and then recreate that moment. That's, yeah. Tell me you have that on your Android phone. You can't, jerks.
Yeah, I mean, they've had, yeah, they've combined it. That's been an iOS and Android for years. Like, an iOS, I think, was the first to do the HDR with the three different picks and combine it and do the color resolution. And everybody, there's that war, like, oh, we'll do this. Android's had their own night vision thing before.
And we
kept saying that. But sometimes people don't hear you say that. They hear, iPhone, shut up. But it's a matter of each one iterative and gets improved, and they get better and better. You know, this version of the night vision is the best I've seen out there between any phone. And then when we get the new Pixel coming out, I'm sure it's going to have amazing features. What's nice about this, it's built right in. You don't switch into a separate mode. You don't go, well, I got to go take a night vision mode. You just pull out your camera, press the button. And what this does, and some of the modern phones will do, is they'll start, that camera will start before you press the button. They're already getting data and getting ready for that photo. So they can say, well, you just press the button, but the camera didn't move much. I have enough data to go do this. And like, yeah, Brian, to your point, is that I could see where you like enough photos where they know what you like as far as your face and your pose or whatever, it might start doing that. And one of the cool things the iPhone has is really good depth data. And there's apps you can see now because they know where the foreground is and the background is, where you can change the lighting and move it around and give your face side lights and direct lights and stuff. A lot of that's going to get built into modern phones, you know? And when that happens, like, yeah, we already talked about how, you know, the feature we have on the phones where I showed you where it does the depth map and you can actually change the angle of the face as you move around.
Right.
And we've talked about how like that may be used in FaceTime to make it look like you're looking at the camera and not the person.
Yes, I mean, we've talked about this before. There's no faster way to telegraph that you are a grandparent than to, I'm going to demonstrate for the live viewers, than to make sure that you're talking to someone like this, where your eyes are clearly not remotely on the camera.
Well, Brian, you know, the point is that if you want to do a show, you got to make eye contact with yourself on the camera screen.
My eyes are
Bryce,
here. My eyes are up here.
So anyhow, the photos are really, really cool. So again, if you get any, whatever your platform of choice is, there's going to be a version of these features. And I think you're going to be very, very, very happy. So I'll just see if I can pull up one more. But it's just it's just exceptional. So anyhow, that's my pick.
Cool. What about you, Bryce? You got a pick?
Yeah, I got a pick. So last week, before it officially launched, I was on the iOS 13.1 beta, which comes out in like 2 days or something. And I got into Apple Arcade, and I've been playing a bunch of those games. But the one I wanted to talk about today is this interesting visual novel called Neo Cab. You guys heard of Neo Cab at all? So it takes place in the future, where you are a cab driver in this metropolis of Los Ojos, and you are a driver for the Neo Cab company. But the city that you're in is a big, what are they called? Capra. They're a big Capra company, which is all autonomous cars. And so as one of the only human drivers in the entire city, you are meeting people, trying to uncover kind of what corporate, you know, misgivings are going on. You sort of navigating the police, who are, you know, very pro Capra. You have friends who are involved with this anti-car activist group, and so it's a really interesting game. And all the while, you are actually you're not, you know, driving the car with a steering wheel or anything, but you're making choices and you're talking to people because you have like a star rating, and if your star rating goes low, then you might lose your job. But you have to make money, and you have to pay for the fuel for your car. You have to find out where you're going to stay at night because your friend, the inciting action is that your friend who you're going to live with disappears. It's really interesting, and I think it works really well on the phone. Apparently, it's on PC also, but having it on the phone with the Apple Arcade stuff, where there's, you know, a hundred games right now. Is really cool. I think if you're in the Apple Arcade space, or if you're trying the free trial, I think that's one to really check out.
So you've mentioned before that you've been playing around with the Apple Arcade. Mm. Is that an enthusiastic thumbs up worthy expense?
Oh yes. $5 a month for all of these games, that any single one of them would have been $2 or $3 alone, is well worth it. I mean, it solves the like in-app purchase problem that kind of everyone has with mobile games, right? Like, oh, it's a free game, but they want you to play, they want you to pay for coins or whatever. But it also solves the other thing of really nice, really small mobile games that cost $2 or $3 and only last a couple of hours, and then you finish it and you're like, oh, that's very good and very short. You don't bump into that, like, feel like you wasted your money. Because there's a ton of games.
Because you're not thinking about it on a per unit basis. Just right. Like it's like you know, you go to the Chinese buffet and you're like, well, I certainly would have paid $5 just for that, but you know, that was a fun couple
of
bites.
I can also get a slice of pizza with it, yeah.
It's I've had it, and I'm not a big gamer, and I thought it was delightful because of that. Like, you have the people who made Monument Valley, they have another little novel sort of game, which is Assemble with Care.
Yes, Assemble with Care is very good.
But it's like, if I'd paid like $5 for that, I'd be like, I don't, I could have spent $5 on a much more intensive game. But you get to the end of that, like, I it's part of my whole monthly plan. It really cost me nothing. And you're like, oh yeah, that's cute. And you have room to create stuff like that. And I think that's wonderful. And so there's Apple Arcade is like the best value out there.
And like, I mean, $5, it's $5 a month, and that's a family plan. So if you got kids, if you got multiple devices, that all goes to it. And like an hour ago, Google announced their Play Pass, which seems a little different. They're going to be taking paid apps and making them free for their subscribers. Details are still incoming about that, but yeah, it seems like they're doing their own version of that.
Yeah, it's great that they're doing it. Yeah, we don't know like what Apple's done here. Like, they went to Monument Valley makers and said, hey, we want to make a game especially for arcade. We'll fund you if you go get into the game. It's published by Apple. And so there's a lot of just, you know, only on here sort of games and stuff. And Google has the ability to do that too, but that's sort of what was nice about this was, like, there are exclusives. It's not just, let's just take a bunch of stuff and shovelware that's been out there and just go for sheer volume. Yeah. There are some really quality originals that are debuting here first that you would easily pay $5 for any of them. And, you know, and stuff that'll make its way elsewhere. And, like, and fun stuff. Like, did you play Pinball Wizard?
Yeah, Pinball Wizard's fun. It's a pinball game, but you're knocking around a wizard through this room, and so you make
it's
him run into enemies.
It's a dungeon crawler with pinball physics, so basically you're bouncing this little wizard around a circular room
that's
like
hilarious.
A turret.
And you hear his feet pitter-patter
and stuff
because he's running.
Yeah, you go up levels.
So. There's a new game from Pendleton Ward and Zach Cage, which is like a card pickup type game, card of darkness, I think. My only complaint about Apple Arcade, and I've seen a few other people on Twitter say this, is that a surprising number of the games will take over audio priority on your phone. So if you're listening to a podcast or music, it'll stop it.
Yeah.
A handful of them don't, but a lot of the ones that you think should, like, respect that, don't. And it's very weird.
Man, that's a bummer. There are games that I full on just will not play because it's like, look, I don't need to hear your bing bong booms or whatever. Yeah, like, I understand for some where there's cinematic or storytelling elements or voice work or whatever. You could talk me into that and saying I would rather you not play the game than play the game without the audio.
I think it's a bug because I started playing a game and I'm listening to the soundtrack. I'm like, it's a little bit Howard Shore-ish. This is interesting. And then I go through and I go to a cutscene. The music continues. It was playing the Lord of the Rings soundtrack in the background. I'd never opened up my audio controls, but there was something, and I realized I clicked it over, and for some reason that started playing. So I think that might be.
Well, there are games, and this has been for years. There are games that simply will not allow you to play a podcast instead of the game audio. They will shut off.
I understand that. I'm saying, but if we're saying that there's a big problem with Apple Arcade games, I'm telling you that I had a problem with an Apple Arcade game that was doing something funky with my sound system. It may not be they're all telling you can't use your sound. There may be something else at play.
Yeah. There are, you know, I've played four or five games that won't kill your audio. So I don't think it's like, you know, some big mandate from Apple. Though I do think we've talked about how they might be monetizing these games in terms of by playtime. And so I found that the Apple Arcade games tend to unload from your phone very quickly. So they'll, like, if you swipe away from it to do something and you come back a few minutes later, it won't still be up, kind of running in the background.
It won't be mid move. Yeah, there is a time limit, like on Hearthstone, like you're connected. It's a live game you're playing against another person. Mm-hmm. So it's like when a text comes in, you jump away and you're like 5, 6, 7, 8. And if you take too long to get back, it's going to be like, well, yeah, I guess you disconnected, you lost.
Well, these will, and I'm talking about unloading the app. So you would boot it again, basically. Which is not a big deal, but it's, you know.
I haven't had that happen to any of the ones I have on here.
It might be because you're on the pro. It could be because you got more RAM or something. or on the 11. But yeah, Apple Arcade, a very big endorsement. And Neo Cab, I think, is a very interesting game to start with.
Man, I just realized that right now is the farthest behind I've ever been on upgrade cycles for my phone. I still have an iPhone 10, mm-hmm. and I have not bought the 11.
Are you going to?
Eventually. But it's very hard to ask people for financial support and then go out and buy iPhones.
Apparently, they made it thicker and gave it a bigger battery, along with all the normal stuff.
Brian, when you were like, oh, my kingdom for a battery that doesn't die halfway through the day, I don't think I've sniffed 60%, and I have been just as obsessive about this phone as I was, probably more so than I was previously. Like, this thing is a hoss.
For the audio listeners, just imagine I'm rubbing my nipples right now. That's exactly what I want to be.
Let me make clear. Like, you had a bunch of people invest in this property, in this compound for you. Let's say you're at the far reaches of there and a brush fire breaks out and your phone's out of battery. How responsible are you, Brian?
Yeah, you know, you're right. Make
and by the way,
investment.
Let's say that it's happening at night and you can't take a proper photo of the fire.
You know what? I mean, I'm not going to claim that there isn't an actual Sasquatch living on this property, but if there was, it'd be a real shame if I couldn't get a decent photo of it. Seems like the only responsible thing to do is for me to get the iPhone 11 Pro, whatever it is.
Pro, yeah, and SXX. Hop into your brand new white Land Rover and, you know, call somebody. So, yeah. Did we go too far on that?
No.
Oh, no.
I think we just ran out of steam on the bit.
Because it would definitely be a Jeep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little too much Righteous Gemstones for me.
Yeah.
Love that show, by the way.
Oh, my God. I caught up on that, too. Jesus. Just so I love every inch of it. Yeah. I'm just going to tell you right now, hey, Misbehavin' slaps.
Oh my God! Complete unironic, oh, they're gonna start the thing and then they're gonna move on, and then I'm like, they're not moving on. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm really digging this. This is fantastic.
The new episode also has they do it again in this latest episode this week. And
yes.
It's so great.
It is tasty. Brian, yeah. It's
Misbehavin' is a song that appeared on the Righteous Gemstones. That's like a folk Christian song that's supposed to have been from like the 70s, and you hear it and it sounds like something that's like a real, it's a really well done song, and you're like, oh, is this a thing? And you're like, nope, made just for the show.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, cause it's like Donnie and Marie, but more, you know, for the specific super Christian like audience. And it's awesome.
The only clue that it's not a real already existing song is the line, run around the house with a pickle in my mouth.
Well, but I don't know. That's to me, Brian, that is the wabi-sabi. That is like the one thing that makes it like a country fried great is like that kind of line, running through the house with a pickle in my mouth.
Especially because when you see in the latest episode, old footage, spoiler, but it doesn't really has nothing to do with the plot, of baby Billy and his sister singing it when they're like 8 years old, you know, and you're like, oh yeah, like I could see like that line being something a kid would say, like in a kid lyric, like, yeah. So
We did have your
there we go. Man, look at that looks like it's straight out of a movie.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess you were making a movie, which is why it probably looks like a movie.
And shooting it on an iPhone 11, so cool. So
that's so great.
It reminds me of like the old National Geographic, you know, where you'd see like those amazing night shots because they were using such good, you know, low light films and knew what they're doing. Here, I don't know what I'm doing. I just press the button. So cool. That's awesome. Yeah, that sky, that was a dark sky.
Cool.
All right, it's been weird. With a pickle in my mouth.
Run around the house with a pickle in my mouth.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.